pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Larry, would you be so kind as to fill out the prayer for us?
Our Father in heaven, we're grateful to be able to be here today, to be able to consider the affairs of the district and what will do our customers and our area the most good. We thank thee for the many blessings which we received at thy hand, and especially for thy son's atoning sacrifice, and for the moisture we received in the past little bit. And we ask thee to continue to bless us with more moisture and with the knowledge and inspiration we need to make the decisions to guide this district in the manner it needs to be guided. And we ask these blessings in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Okay. Tom, if we could start with our roll call.
Thomas Rusty, present.
Corey Elzeth, present.
Larry Bagshot, present.
Ray Heddens, present.
Tammy Albright, present.
George Rokowski, present.
Roger Childers, present.
Sharon Nolan, present.
David Dickinson, present.
Paul Hendricks, present.
I declare we have a full quorum. Thank you very much, everyone. Okay, at this point, okay, really the purpose of today's study session, and I know I'd received some comments back that there were folks who thought we had reached a consensus on the rate study. Marvin had not gotten his final report out, but before that even came out, Sharon was in contact with them, and after reviewing the options, noticed something that maybe we were not aware of. So we thought we would just revisit this topic to make sure that we do fully understand the impact of which option to choose. So, Sharon?
Okay, the board did approve the rate study in its entirety at the March 3rd meeting. At that time, option 3 was approved. However, when reviewing the differences in the rates, option 2, the uniform adjustment rate, takes the district's current rates and adds the 6.3% adjustment for fiscal year 23. In the past, the district has established different base rates for residential and commercial. Therefore, option 2 will maintain those differences. Option 3 is based on meter equivalency. This rate is based on meter size for all classes of customers. Therefore, there will be no difference in the base rate between residential and commercial customers. While this is fair based on meter size, it will reduce the commercial customers' base rates instead of the 6.3 increase of the current rates. And so that's the big difference. The meter equivalency doesn't have anything to do with rates the district has previously established. The uniform rate takes our established rates, adds 6.3 to all of those, including the percentage that it's going to do to the water. So in other words, commercial customers, their rate, if you look on for the 5/8 inch meter, their rate would drop from right now it's 68.50, it's going to go to 72.82 under the uniform, but it's going to drop to 53.51 if we use option 3.
Which and reduces the monthly.
Not sure it's advisable for the district.
No.
Since we have differences in base rates for residential and commercial. If we didn't, it wouldn't be an issue, but we do. And also, that option also will take our customers that have 1-inch meters, which we do have some residential, we have about 12 residential ones, it will take their uniform rate from 70.86 to 133.78, which is pretty unfair just because they have a 1-inch meter. The larger meters, it's not such a big deal because they're all commercial meters with already established rates. And if you look at the 2-inch meter, the universal, the option 2 will increase the rate to 234. Option 3 will increase it to 428. I think the district will probably get some flack on doubling people's rates.
And we have 6 that have 2-inch?
Yes, we have 6 that have 2-inch and 11 that have the commercial.
How many commercial 5/8 meters do we have?
51, it says.
51.
Commercial.
Yes.
What's the difference between 1-inch residential and 1-inch commercial? They're both 1-inch. Why the difference?
Because the district has established higher rates for commercial base rate than residential rates over the years.
Okay.
So that's why they're different.
How long have you been using the uniform adjustment?
Well, we haven't. We've just been arbitrarily, like the last 2 years, we've raised the base rate across the board for $5. We haven't ever had a rate study like this.
Okay.
So this is the first opportunity to have a rate study, which is supposed to give you fair and equal to all customers. And it actually does, but because we have these established commercial rates higher than residential, they're going to get a break if you keep stay with option 3.
Yeah.
And their rate's going to go down.
That's only 5/8 though.
Yeah, the rest of them go up.
The rest of them do go up. Yeah, the 2 bigger ones go up. Mm-hmm.
But that's, most of them are 5/8.
Yes. Majority of our meters are 5/8 inch meters.
And again, there the differential is because they're of a commercial user. That's why we call it a commercial meter, even though it's both 5/8.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can assume from years past, that
okay.
The boards felt that the commercial users are going to put more of a demand, even though the meter size is the same. They're probably going to put more of a demand on the system than the residents are. So their base rates were increased over the years.
So what's the hypothetical difference for the year based on option 2 versus option 3? For how much we would do? How much we would take in?
I don't know, because he didn't. It's in part of the rest of the schedule. And it's based on the base rate with the water usages per 5 meters. So I think the first year is like $163,000 more. And that would have to be based on the uniform adjustment, because I don't think they would ever do it on option 3 for the study.
I thought in the study that we saw, the theory was the same dollars, 2 and 3.
No.
No.
No?
No, it's not. I think
three,
the dollars...
3 was more dollars, but I didn't realize that 3 didn't have the cost adjustment, and that makes a difference. So.
Well, and that's because when you're doubling
right.
some rates, you are going to have a lot more. But I believe he used the uniform adjustment. In fact, I know he used
mm-hmm.
the 6.3 adjustment to our current rates to arrive at what the estimated annual revenue would be. Because he'd have no way of knowing if we were going to do
right.
option 3.
Mm.
And they wouldn't present dollars for option 3.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt it warranted some more discussion because I felt we would, I didn't think we should be going backwards on our customer, on our commercial
no.
customers.
No, I didn't realize that would do that. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we need to keep the cost of living adjustments.
Yeah.
Well, I think also that since we haven't really established any kind of norm, we should probably make sure that if we do go with option two, that we consistently do that going forward.
That's how the report is.
Yeah.
For the subsequent years. Yeah. It's already adjusted for three, it's going to be 3% in the following years. Until 2027.
Yeah, but I mean, because of the fact that we need to get more water.
Yeah.
We're going to need additional funds.
Yeah. We're looking to get some grant funds, and we're hoping that next Thursday maybe we'll get some good news on that. Yeah.
At least get the ball rolling.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, do we know, as far as raw gallons, how much the commercial side of our business eats up in comparison to the residential? Raw gallons.
Raw gallons? Shouldn't be too hard to calculate. Do I know it off the top of my head? No. But I mean, actually, we have that in a, would it be in this financial report?
No, we
don't.
Because
we have usage by tiers.
Well, we have usage by tiers, but I don't think the usage is broken up by residential and commercial.
I thought it was.
I think it's just totals. The base rate is broken up by residential and commercial because we track the base rates.
It hasn't been calculated, but it's...
The usage is not...
The commercial usage is a lot higher because we have the... Tom Weeks and the restaurants and stuff, so they use a lot more water than
them. Yeah, but as a whole, I'm talking. I mean, it would I mean, you know, does commercial use 20% of all the water?
Right.
Or does it just use 2%?
And that's the number to know, because I was just doing the math on the connections. It's 2% of the connections, so 2% uses what percent?
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Because that's reading that article you put in here, Larry, about AMAs and stuff.
Yeah.
It would tie into that.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing that I can see happening is if commercial people find out that it's because of the size of the meter, maybe they'll ask to go down to a smaller size just to try to get a better rate or something. So
that
could open a can of worms.
Well, the rate schedule has always been published every single year, and the board votes on it, and the rates have been different for years between residential and commercial, so it's not a surprise. They have the size meter that they have because they need it for their business. In fact, the people that have one-inch meters, when we were doing the change-out, Morgan told me that they were asked if they wanted to go down to 5/8 inch meters, and they all said they wanted to keep their 1 inch meters.
Well, they did.
So that's why we have those with 1 inch.
What criteria do we use to differentiate between residential and commercial? I guess to Rogers.
It's just it's in the billing, how it's billed.
But I mean, if someone were to come, to Rogers' point, what if one of the commercials would come with us and come to us and say, I'd like to go to a residential.
Residential, we have a definition for residential,
okay. But
commercial.
But it's not a good definition.
Partly
we do that.
Zone commercial, it's got to be commercial.
Okay.
Commercial is for anything other than an individual or family. So
I would think if they want to downsize, you'd look at their usage history and calculate out what the meter can handle.
Yeah.
Okay. And we base a downsizing decision on their past history.
Well, it's interesting because I know when shortly after I joined the board, we talked about charging these Airbnbs commercial rate. So I guess that definition then would not apply.
Well,
we would have had to modify
what I hope
the definition
to change with the proposal I'm going to make.
Right.
Because
we're
going to need a uniform com- commercial code, whatever, a uniform water code, so we can define how we're going to bill and what rates we're going to charge.
We had a lot of flack over that.
How we're going to classify. Well, at the time, we had some vested interest in officer.
We've had flack in the past, we will have more flack in the future, I can hear. So we're going to have to consider it.
So if we stayed with option two, then there would be less likely any commercial would want to downsize their...
Right.
And mess with the, that.
Because it follows more what we've done in history. Than the other option does. And that's all you know, Tammy, you had wanted us to get a rate study a long time ago when you first got on the board. So I jumped at the chance to get this when we got it for free.
Needed it. We needed to have some reason, something to show customers why you're charging what you charge.
If there's no more discussion, I move that we adopt option two.
Does this have to go to a regular session?
It will have to be in a regular session.
That's why it's on here.
She has it as an agenda item. So I guess here, we're just from a consensus standpoint.
You're just having time to spend discussing.
Right. So that would be the response to you when you asked me. I thought we already decided on the option. We never looked at that.
I didn't realize that we didn't have a cost adjustment factor in there.
This time I agree. No reductions.
I don't think any of us did because they presented it as residential and commercial.
You know, again, never knowing how long these sessions are going to take. Up to this point, I've never scheduled enough time, so we've always been pressed for time. And Sharon today's, probably should have just done a 30-minute meeting instead of the 1 hour. So there's nothing else we can talk about.
Larry, what?
How about, like,
that's kind of what do you?
I mean,
what?
We don't have any other agenda items.
For study session.
We can't really talk about anything per the agenda. We can motion to adjourn and we can talk about anything we want until the next meeting.
You'll violate open meeting law?
No.
Yeah, we will.
You can't meet unless you're in session.
Correct.
And talk about anything.
Over three.
Not yet, more
Three. Larry, stop talking.
Then what could we then bring into this rate study to possibly have another discussion?
Just out of curiosity, and this is kind of a side rate study.
Right.
All your hotels, motels, and everything pay a special tax in this state.
Okay.
Do Airbnb pay the tax?
Yes.
Yeah.
They do, okay.
Official ones do, yes.
Yeah. If you look at the assessment you just got in the mail, it says whether it's your residence is occupied by the owner or whether it's rented out and stuff, they have three different or four different rates they charge. So we should be able to pull off Airbnbs by that.
But you'd have to be honest with that. To say, yes, I do
have.
Well, and we do have a number of Airbnb on residential rates because they don't admit to being Airbnbs.
Don't they have to register with the county?
Yes.
No.
I thought they did. Yeah, they do.
Yes and no.
Yes and no.
I like the yes.
Officially, they do. But realistically, I can cite some instances where I've asked about properties that have changed hands. They are on residential meters, but they are Airbnb or ERBOs. They're being used as that. Unregistered, but...
I thought there was some kind of a state thing that said we couldn't treat them differently. I thought we had this discussion.
Well, I thought that's what we were trying to do, was to make the Airbnbs be commercial.
Right, and there was some reason why we couldn't
Well, the reason was that we didn't have the staff to follow up on it.
Well, and there's no way to find out who's actually doing it unless you go to the county records. But some of them may be renting out just a room in their home, so are they really a commercial business?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people Airbnb just some rooms and not their whole residence.
Or even if they rent a whole residence, they do it as an individual owner and not as a corporation.
Yeah.
Which means they can't write it off.
Right.
But they can still collect money for it.
Right.
But I think part of that discussion was, if they aren't there in Airbnb, what's the difference of me being in my home 365 days a year? You know, so they're not in that home when they're Airbnb. Another family is, or whoever, occupying the residence.
Or a couple.
Right.
But
so,
she's right. Sometimes they just do a room. Like, I've rented an Airbnb out of state, and I just have their basement. They live upstairs.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that they didn't have it registered.
That's why I think we need a policy to
when there's a property change, the gals are asking them now if they're on Airbnb, and they note the account just for future reference.
Because it makes a difference. It makes a difference in our consumer, our water consumption. It makes a difference in the whole neighborhood. So.
Well, you notice the usage report and the treasurer's report this month. For February, for January, we had 699 residents that used zero water. Hmm. And for February, we had 776 residents that used zero water.
Yeah.
So apparently the pandemic's over. And people had to go back to their residences in the valley.
And no snow.
To work.
I have rental places near me. They're not always rented. Matter of fact, a lot of time, if they have one person in there a week for 2 days, 3 days, that's it.
Yeah.
So.
Yes, it's really, we determined that it was really too difficult to be able to segregate them from the rest of the customers. And we finally had to drop it because we were getting so much flack on Nextdoor and on Facebook and people calling in here.
Yeah. They're paying extra taxes, that tax. And. They are putting in more money to the general fund for the state, so.
Yeah.
Paul, I saw your hand earlier.
We do some work with the City of Globe, and they have, in their water rate, they have an assessment, line item assessment for future water. And you may want, before you finalize all your rate stuff, you may want to check with the City of Globe and find out what their rate is, how they have. It has wound up accumulating several hundred thousand dollars. We use that for well development, and it's a specific item for future water.
So it's part of their bill every month, everybody's bill, a certain little percentage goes into this fund for future water.
It's some fee, and it's set aside, and it goes into a separate capital account in the water reserve fund, and it's for future water. So you may want to look at that before you finalize your rate.
Just a couple dollars to each
not
person?
Much, but over the years it's piled up. They have about 3,500 customers, so not much different than y'all as far as how many customers. And I don't know specifically if it's a dollar a month per customer times 3,000 or so much per thousand. But it's published, and so you may want to look that up.
It's kind of like that assessment we had for people if they get a bad leak that they put on a couple years ago, 5 years ago maybe, where you charge an extra 50 cents a dollar.
For the insurance. So anyway, that doesn't raise your base, but it creates a cash flow for future water.
Now, as far as raising impact fees and on without notice fees and all these other little fees, that's a separate vote.
It's on our rate schedule.
It's on our rate schedule.
Yeah.
But when do we change that? that we need to change it before the next fiscal year?
Each year.
We can change that on our budget year or something.
So we'll just have to vote on that next month?
And having a rate study discussion now, would not even be discussed.
Right.
What do we pay for impact right now?
It's...
$2,000.
Okay.
Well, a few years...
Well, $2,000 to up to $3,000.
In a few years, when David gets all his new piping and his workers have nothing to do because there's no breaks, we could talk about doing the insurance like they do down in Phoenix for, from the meter to the house, insure it, charge them an extra $5 for that.
Well, they already have insurance.
Yeah, that's what it is right now.
We have that already.
That's what the insurance is for.
No, but you got to fix it. The insurance in Phoenix or the city of Phoenix, they will fix your line if it breaks.
Oh, yeah, this one is just for the water.
Yeah, just for the water.
That leaked, the cost of the water that leaked.
It is for repair of the line.
No, we have the repair too. The $1.80 is for water leaks, the $5 a month is for repairs.
And that goes to the insurance company?
Yeah.
To the district?
Yeah, we collect it and send it to the insurance company. When they have an issue, they deal with the insurance company.
So if you want to self-insure and be in that business, yeah.
Or get on their vendor list, but we can't do that either.
So do we need to vote today?
No, you just...
On a regular meeting, on the regular meeting.
Yeah, during the regular meeting, the board meeting will bring it up.
So I mean, we could vote on the rate study today and then take a look at seeing about what Paul was suggesting, you know, as far as...
Well, we can change the rates or the impact fees or whatever pursuant to our budget year, so that's not a problem.
But when do we have to solidify the budget year that's coming up for 2023?
End of June.
June meeting.
Yeah.
July 1 is our fiscal.
We will start considering it in April and it'll have to be finalized in June for public notice in July.
Chair.
The end of June.
I've been here for 6 years and never seen that $5 insurance ever, anyplace.
It was optional.
I'm about to say, I've never seen it ever.
On your bill?
Never.
It was an optional. The $1.80 was automatic to everybody.
Right,
but if you wanted the $5, you had to opt in.
Yeah, but I'm thinking we should send that out all the time though, right? Every year, or we just send it out one time and that was it.
Well, it was...
Because I'm just saying, I've never...
It was when we went with the program. That's very true.
Nobody knew we know that.
You know what, it's probably in the new customer packet. My guess would be it's in the new customer packet.
We have a new customer packet?
Yes.
Oh, I never got that either.
When were you a new customer?
Since about 7 years ago.
Well, I got the notice about the insurance because I actually had a leak at my place. I had a pretty high bill before they got it fixed. And that's when I was given the option for the insurance.
Yeah, and the $5, it's only $5.
I'm not buying anything.
Well, that's the repair. The $1.80 is for the water consumption.
Right, I know about the water. That I did get information on. They sent it out to everybody because you had to deny it.
And that $5 goes to our insurance company too? If someone selects that?
To A insurance. It goes to Home Serve, yeah.
Home Serve, okay.
Yeah. And they're the ones that deal with all the repairs and the water loss and everything else. So the customer deals, when they have a problem, they deal directly with them. And then Home Serve sends the money here to be applied to the customer's account for the excess water or for the repair that was done. So the customer really doesn't ever get paid because the district is collecting the funds and sending it in. So when the customers have a problem, they send the money here to pay their bill.
The adjustments there.
Yeah.
Well, certainly I think something we should consider as we get nearer to the putting the budget together for 2023, that we consider that, you know, along with the impact fees and whatever else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When's the last time that was increased?
Each year. The impact fees have not been increased.
They have not been increased.
No, because the last, there wasn't a lot of building and stuff going on until probably 2 years ago when Pugel did this, and now he wants to do the other thing. But there was only individuals that were building. There wasn't really any development. And then, unfortunately...
In the moratorium.
Yeah, and then we're in the moratorium, so there was no reason to raise the impact fee. However, we got to be real, not necessarily careful about it, but he still has 17 meters.
That we would have to pay.
We had to pay, or he has 33 meters. We had to pay his impact fees on those that he's taken so far.
Yeah. Couldn't we put a document together to say we would pay the impact fees at the time that those meters were...
We probably could.
You know, contractually agreed to.
Yeah, it isn't. It isn't even up to him because it doesn't affect him. It only affects us. The board waived him, and then so the district has to waive him.
And those impact fees go to the district?
They're in a separate bank account.
Okay.
Yes.
And you're going to have all those people on the waiting list that are going to be ticked off that... We wait, if we increase them, and then when they do get the meter, they're paying higher impact fees when they have signed up for it during lower.
Some tells me if they get water, they're not going to care about the impact fees. If they get a meter, they're going to be going yahoo.
Paul, you kept raising your hand.
Yeah, and I was just going to make the exact same point a little differently than Commissioner Allred did, and that is look at the people on the list. And multiply that times whatever the impact fee is going to be and see if that's going to provide enough revenue to make a difference of when you would be able to fund water resource that would allow you to relieve the moratorium. And everybody is charging more than you're charging for development impacts.
Are they really?
Yeah, the numbers are high. So, I mean,
that's
a lot.
All you have to do is look. Well, ask yourself what new water costs. Don't ask yourself of what your current water costs. So you have to ask yourself. So a lot of people are doing development impact fee studies. You know, Florence, Coolidge, and a lot of people in the growth areas because they're really getting stressed. Development comes in and says, hey, I want to get hooked up. And they're saying, well, everybody who's here now shouldn't subsidize any of the new people.
Right.
And so what is a new gallon of water cost? What is a new 1,000 gallons of water cost? What is a new 1,000,000 gallons? Mm-hmm. It's not what does today's water cost.
And that's what the impact fees cover.
That's what the impact fees cover. And under the... litigation that happened a few years ago when the boom was on and Peoria used the impact fees to build a town hall and got and then the legislature changed it. You have to use the impact fees for growth.
I thought that has been a law for a long time that you couldn't use it for anything other than the new lines and stuff like that.
Yeah. You're correct. It was always the intent, but it wasn't the letter of the law. The city of Peoria, they said, well, you know, the new city hall is for growth. Our old city hall isn't big enough. And so they put the city hall, and the developers said, golly, we're talking about pipes and we're talking about things like that, not nice offices. They just built too nice of an office at the time.
Well, the district needs an office building. Or needs to buy one.
At any rate. They're always going to be mad, but this really is the time to take a hard look at that.
That rate for water reserves for future is $1.70 a month.
Okay.
Not bad. If you're in the city or out of the city. They have non-city and city rates.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, it gives you an idea. And they've amassed it, and I know there's enough in there that when we have to do a big well project, it's right there.
Oh. And they bill their water by 100 gallons, not 1,000 gallons.
It's all math.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Do you see a base rate, Sharon?
Yes, there's a city residential minimum base rate of $10.15. And there's a non-city residential base rate of $26.50.
but for every 100 gallons, they're paying something.
Yeah, class one is one user, up to 4,000 gallons is 0.35 1/100 gallons.
So we just jumped right to 1,000.
Right to 1,000. Mm-hmm.
But it's equivalent or close.
Most places bill by 1,000 gallons.
What were the impact connections?
I didn't see any impact. I do take that back. I do.
You know, Cora, you made a good point. If we're going to do that future water tax or whatever you call it.
I don't call it that.
Whatever you want to call it, you know.
Yeah.
It would make sense to roll that out with the relief of the moratorium.
Right.
The moratorium gets relieved. Say, okay, we're relieving the moratorium, but we know we're probably going to need additional wells in the future.
We're
going to
be there
again. So this is an extra $2 we're putting out here to help solve the problem so it doesn't happen again.
The whole reason for developers footing the cost of their development was they paid the cost so the old people didn't have to cover them. We're in that same situation in several situations where our present water users are going to be saddled with massive fees for future water unless we adjust them somehow.
I guess the way we roll it out, it's not future water to handle new construction, it's for our entire community sustainable future. So it is how you roll it out.
That'd be a good thing to call it sustainability, not tax, but
sustainability fee. And your development impact is new people.
Is new people
putting stress on to the existing system, and so you need to charge enough for the new people that the existing people aren't burdened by it.
Yeah.
And to give you an idea, Milk Ranch 1 was purchased at $400,000 plus or minus. Portals 4, they claim was $1 million. Our deep well is going to be $2 million. So we're talking about $1 million, well, 100% increase every 5 years or whatever. But
okay, 20%.
So we need to consider that.
See, Milk Ranch was bought 10 years ago.
Yeah, but
for $450,000, but then it ended up being about $700,000.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it doesn't seem like we're going to get out of the moratorium 100%. I think, you know, the state is so dry that we're
there's no prayer of ever releasing the moratorium at the, under the present circumstances.
Yeah, it might be just releasing a certain number of permits or something like that per year based on.
We're going to have to consider that, but as far as releasing the moratorium, that isn't going to happen.
Yeah, I don't see it either.
We need to rewrite that. Something you and I will
count. I didn't like that article, Larry.
We don't have any hope of hitting the numbers to just totally release the moratorium. So.
As far as the City of Globe, their residential and commercial base rates are the same, but they charge the commercial customers more for water than the residential.
Did they have a development impact fee?
They do have several impact fees inside the city, outside the city. New taps, existing mains, all different sizes.
How do they kind of relate to ours?
A new tap for a 3/4-inch water meter is $1,940. That's outside the city. Inside, it's $860. And so they don't have, they list everything as 3/4, 1, and over 1 on theirs. But they have water and sewer connection. So they had two fees, so that's probably why they're a little bit lower. In the city, a new commercial connection is $2,142. A residential is $902. Non-city is $1,687 and $3,100. for sewer between residential and commercial.
Actually, 2 feet.
And these are from October 2018. They haven't raised their rates.
And this rate study, these new rates go into effect July 1?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
So it makes sense that we begin to think about impact fees, so all that could be rolled up. The
all
sustainment,
the, right.
You know, fee or yeah. fund or whatever we call it, those types
yeah,
of things.
Yeah, if you look at, this is only the rate study with, and that's only water rates
right.
And base fees. So yeah, that's all that was in there. But our rate structure is a whole big page of all kinds of different fees that we charge. The meter fees and
well,
all
I think we need to maybe take a look at that over the next couple of months. Would that be a study session then?
Well, actually, I think the Water Enhancement Committee maybe should review first.
We will have to review
yeah,
that.
Yeah, because normally it was just Jody and I because nobody else wanted to participate.
Okay.
So. Yeah, and then we'll present it to the board.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know that article, Larry, that you sent from the Arizona Republic? You know, I'm aware of the people in Wilcox and what's going on, the people that have the shallow wells are losing their water and they're going
right.
dry on. And the question I have is, we do our deep well. Is that going to cause other wells to go dry too?
Didn't you discuss David casing that?
Yeah. The shallow wells, the way they drill them, they have to drill them a specific way so they don't drain out all the shallow wells. That happened at Portal 4. They got partially down there, and everybody drained right into them, and they had to start over again.
And fill with some animals.
Well, Chuck, sorry, you lost water in your well.
But I think that
should.
Yeah, that's just
part of geologically so difference. It's such a difference. I think after what we're talking, right, Paul? A 2,000-foot well shouldn't interfere with a 150-foot well. Or
yeah, and it may not, because in the Wilcox area, it's like a big basin. I think everybody's taking from the same.
We want that basin.
just as a point, most of the wells that are being drilled now are 400 feet. They're deeper than the shallow wells that are going dry. So,
and what's a shallow well? 200?
Yeah.
200 feet in place.
Okay.
Most of the wells that are less than 200, say 250 feet, are subject to going dry. So if you want a deeper aquifer that's not as subject to going dry, you've got to go 400 feet.
Well, and I think that's why you made the comment, Paul, this morning about, you know, couldn't we take a shallow well and drill down that hole? At the, you know, we're already at 200 feet or 250. Why not take a well that may be dry or, you know, at least at that level, and take it down to the 2,000 feet.
Well, that's...
But comment made that, well, we'd have to concrete it to close off any...
That's something that...
The tooling casing size is different, too. That's part of the problem. It's a larger tool, that's what Paul's saying,
likely,
larger diameter.
Might likely be.
It's something we've considered in the water sharing committee, but not extensively.
Well, I think
from my experience in the oil industry, we can case off anything we want to case off. So if we want to case off the 150-foot level, we can just cement down to that 150-foot level and produce well below that. We can perforate and produce anywhere in between. So it's not a matter, my suggestion is that we seriously consider at least cloning, if not drilling every well we have that is not 400 feet deep, and get the deeper aquifer that's not so subject to drying out. That, in my opinion, would cost us $500,000, and it would conceivably double or triple our water production.
And there would be a more consistent supply, probably.
Yeah, but with dozens of wells producing 10-20 gallons a minute would be a lot better than one big well producing 150 gallons a minute.
So
It's the chickens in the basket, or that argument, you know, the more wells you have, even if they're producing less water, the better off you are, because you don't have to depend on...
Don't put your all your eggs in one basket.
We don't have to depend on Milk Ranch 3, we could depend on 5 wells instead.
So David, on all the wells that we have that are dry...
Just roughly speaking, that program would cost us $500,000.
It depends on where the...
So what he just said is there's some that are 400 feet and they're dry.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's a guarantee.
Well, yeah, because...
I mean, I'm sure it would help, but I don't know if it's a guarantee that we could put...
It's not a guarantee, but it's a reasonable probability that we would increase production, because the 400-foot level is dependable around this area for the deeper Schnebley Hills production. So
when I first came on board, one of the first things we did with the staff we had on hand was get all the wells, all the information from all the wells that we could off of EDWR, mm-hmm. and did a 60-year study to see. And over 60 years, the upper aquifer dropped 57 feet. So, you know, almost a foot a year. So, you know, K2, we found out that today, it supposedly as dry as 250 feet. Just 100 yards away is the Johnson Wells. They're at 400 and they're doing fine. So, yeah, we could conceivably deepen a lot of these shallow.
That's a really good option for us. Yeah.
So, if we're keeping on agenda of talking about the rates that we need in order to be able to drill our existing wells deeper, that's something I think we can consider in the budget this next year.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And our sustainable fee could go towards future.
It could go towards new wells or deepening wells.
Well, if you got, let's say you have 3,000 paying customers and it's $1.50 or $2 a month, that gives you a cash flow number. We go to WIFA and say, this is the cash flow we have. We want to do $500,000 worth of little well work, because they won't pay for new, but they'll pay for fixing stuff. You could say to them, we'll dedicate this $2 a month for future water or whatever, sustainable water, excuse me. And they'd say, well, we can give you this much based upon that rate.
But to deepen a well, what's it going to cost?
Well, I don't know, but I'm just saying.
No, I understand your point. My point is, do we need to go to WIFA?
Well,
or could we do it ourselves? Just say the sustainability fee, when it gets up to a certain amount, we deepen another well.
Well, it sounds like it might take a while. If we needed $500,000 to do some of them, that'd be a while before we had that.
I think we would be smarter to have a set funding source, so that we know how much money we're dealing with all the time.
Yeah, but if we have a set funding source and WIFA gives us the loan and we are paying it back at that low interest rate based on that set, that's a great deal. You get it done right away.
Yes, it is.
I guess my only point,
$6,000 a month.
Yeah.
My only point I was really trying to make is if we decide to spend $500,000 deepening a well or whatever it costs, and we don't get any more source out of it, we just get a more reliable source, it's not really going to help our problem. A more reliable source will help a little, but we'll still need additional source.
I don't think it was $500,000 for each well, was it?
It will be an additional source, whether it's 100% additional or whatever, it will be an additional source, because we're talking about tapping more aquifers. So.
And that number you quoted is for all the wells that we have? Or the drive, that $500,000 that you quoted?
The $500,000 is assuming
how many 20
wells, which is roughly 20. what we have to clone. So clone or deepen, whatever you want. So
the $500,000 would come with 20 wells.
That's my just...
But if it was dry right now, and now all of a sudden it was a producer, then that's...
Well, that's something that's what we're talking about. You're talking about reviving dead wells. I thought we were just talking about deepening existing wells.
I thought there were some of them that were dry, that if we dropped them down, they would be a producer.
I will give you a case in point.
There's no guarantee.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a guy up in Strawberry. He has a well right across the street from his brother-in-law, I think it is. His brother-in-law's well went dry. It's 200 some odd feet deep, 210 feet deep, I think. His well is 230 feet deep and is still productive, but he's worried about it going dry.
But as you may or may not know, we have about $500,000 a year in capital improvement
money. Right.
That's already in your budget, in your
rate. Right,
right.
We have to decide if we're buying pickup trucks, we're buying an office building, we're buying a new pump, we're buying a deeper well.
And currently if projected as it is right now, David will have almost $500,000 left in his regular operations budget at the end of the year. So whether or not we use that to pay down debt?
We have plenty of needs, but...
Yeah, that's what it's projecting right now. We're way below. So his operation budget, I mean everything, all the line items, not just one.
What I based that proposal on is when we were asking USDA for a $500,000 grant. I thought if we got that $500,000 grant, we could probably cover the cloning or deepening with that money. It'd come close anyway. So,
well, we can certainly get some specific quotes if the district feels it's in their best interest to look at putting together a program for deepening existing wells.
Mm-hmm.
That might be a few hundred feet above what we think the current water table is. And, you know, to get down to other wells in the area that
mm-hmm.
do have water. And we can do a few. Not the end of the world to do it.
Is that something Marvin could do?
Well, it's something
our Carl. I get Marvin and Carl. Well, because we're talking Marvin rates.
Yeah. No, we're talking Carl rates.
Yeah. So Marvin. Yeah.
It's something that we can look at and then have a couple of people that are smarter than me give us an opinion as to whether, you know, what your return on investment might be. And then we get some quotes on wells.
Realistically, K2, if we deepened it to the level that SV5 is, and we got that kind of a well, would we increase our production? Yes, we'd increase it noticeably.
David, see if you can get on Craigslist and find a driller.
Well, you got the two Rimwoods wells that are dry. On that side of the canyon, Tank Farms is 700 feet deep. The two Rimwoods are real shallow.
Right.
A tank farm puts out 23 gallons a minute, so conceivably, if you deepen the two rim ones, you can almost get 50 right there. And then K2, if you deepen it to Johnson well, just 100 yards away, you can pull Johnson's 15, you can get 15 out of it, where it's not doing anything right now.
No.
How deep is SV1?
400.
400.
That little hill has got its own little arc.
I know, yeah. That's a great hill.
We can get a cost per foot for this kind of drilling.
Well, yeah.
From drillers.
Just ballpark estimate.
Yeah,
right, now a 400 foot well is running $10,000 to $12,000. So at that rate and the infrastructure to hook them up, I was figuring $25,000.
That's already
so
there.
We could do 20. If we're cloning our own wells, the infrastructure's already there in most instances.
Yeah, so it's a casing and additional pipe and a few things.
New ATC, new round.
And that was part of the discussion versus going to a well site and having to start from scratch, even buying the property.
Right.
Possibly.
Right.
Whereas if we go to one existing, and just go deeper.
Yeah.
May make sense financially. Well, certainly financially, but is the source there? That's
a very exciting discussion. I'm ready. Let's get up to good work. Well, we can't make a decision.
Everybody throw $20 on the table.
That's it.
All right. Well, good discussion. I think that's certainly something we need to further discuss as we get into the budget preparation stage, looking at all these rates, and I think it's an opportune time with the rate increases coming out from the rate study and the sustainability fund. I think that's a great opportunity, and you know, who's going to really complain about it? I mean, it's to sustain what we presently have. And I don't think anybody would object. Well, I mean, there's always going to be objectors.
Yeah, but if you can keep your impact fees for the new people
yes.
and call this sustainable, you're going to get a whole lot less yeah. argument mm-hmm. from the existing customers.
And I think the Airbnb should be back open for maybe some discussion to see what we do with those folks.
Well, I will be bringing that up.
At the,
because I think, well, in my discussion, I will point out the problems with the Airbnbs. Right now, I don't know if the board's aware of it, but everything south of Fossil Creek is zoned for trailers. Which means that all those big lots, if they were developed at, say, the density of the Tiny Pineys down here, Peagle's Tiny Pineys, we could conceivably looking at adding 5,000 new hookups, which is totally insane. We couldn't possibly. So we need to address that.
Yeah, but is it still single family? Because single family, even if it's zoned for trailers, it's still only one trailer per lot.
Single family residents or guest homes, and then.
Because the Tiny Pineys are, that's a development, that's a multi-family development. It's got a multi-family zoning on it.
Right.
Whereas if it's still residential, you still are limited to one dwelling unit per lot. You can have an in-law suite, but.
The county took in everything on the south side of Fossil Creek, so for trailer parks.
Trailer parks.
Because I asked them, I called them, several years ago to ask about why they were getting double wides in our subdivision, basically the Ponderosa subdivision that Summerhaven was zoned for site built homes, that we had several double wides put on it, and the county said that's fine. It's out of the Fossil Creek, so
the county
mobile homes
always. Doesn't care as long as there's increased tax rate. And that is the case with Tiny Pineys.
Yeah, but that's still, what looks like a mobile home could be a UBC home, which is equivalent to a site built.
That's what mine is, a Clayton manufacturer.
So, yeah. I mean, it just depends on what you, but
yeah,
if
but
you're
they,
saying mobile home park, that's a multi-family type of development.
When I was talking to them, they said mobile home parks.
I would be interested to see what the zoning is in the area you're talking about.
She said everything south of Fossil Creek Road.
So that's your
Strawberry Inn.
Right.
Well, there are mobile parks back in there.
Well, there's one right across the street from us with four units on it, or four trailers on it, right across the street from us.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good discussion. We have a motion to adjourn out of study session.
That's 1 minute.
Second?
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Adjourned.